Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yirmiyahu Perek Mem Tet, Chapter 49. Chapter 49 is the fourth in a series of Nevuot Legoyim, prophecies to the nations. Unlike the three Nevuot that preceded it, which only addressed one country, Chapter 49 gives Nevuah to five different countries. The first is Ammon, the country to the north of Moab, and just on the other side of the Jordan River from Yisrael in modern-day Jordan. In fact, the capital of Jordan, Amman, is named after the ancient capital of Ammon, Rabbat Ammon, a city that's mentioned in this parak. The second and longest nevuah is to Edom, which today is the southern part of Jordan, right across the border from the Negev Desert, close to the modern-day cities of Eilat and Mitzpe Ramon. The third nevuah is to Damascus, which is what is today modern-day Damascus. At one time, Damascus was the capital of Aram-Damascus, but it was captured by the Assyrians in the 700s. After the fall of Assyria, Damascus never really became an independent country, but they did have people living in the area. They are eventually taken over by the Babylonians as they conquer the Assyrian lands. The fourth nevuah is to Kedar, who were nomadic tribes in the Arabian Desert, in what is modern-day northern Saudi Arabia. They too are eventually captured by Babylonia, who incorporated these lands into their own and did not want independent nomadic tribes moving around and capturing land. The final nevuah is to Elam, a powerful country all the way in the east, where today is modern-day Iran. All of these countries will fall. All will be swept away by the power of the Babylonian occupation. All will eventually lose their power that seemed so great at the time, and they will become nothing more than another one of the Babylonian conquests. Some countries have specific sins mentioned that they will pay for. Ammon, for example, will receive retribution for conquering the land of Shevet Gad, which bordered their land. Ammon was a perpetual enemy of Bnei Israel from all the way back in the time of the Shoftim, and they even sent troops to fight along the Babylonians when Yerushalayim was first occupied in the time of Jehoiakim. Later, they were one of the countries to whom Yirmiyahu sent a yoke, signifying that they were interested in joining a rebellion against Babylonia with Zedekiah. Edom is also a perpetual enemy of Malchut Yudah, starting all the way back in David's time. They are mountain dwellers, and according to Yirmiyahu, put great trust in the fact that their country is impenetrable because of its topography. Yirmiyahu says in verse 16, Tiflat Zecha Hesi Otcha, Zedon Libecha. Shochni b'chagvei ha-sela, tovsi meron giv'a, ki tagbia kanesher kinich, misham oridcha, Nu'um Hashem. Your horrible nature, Edom, your arrogant heart has seduced you. You, who dwell in the clefts of the rock, who occupy the height of the hill, should you nest as high as an eagle, from there I will pull you down. This idea of living in the mountains and thinking nobody can capture us because who can capture the mountains is part of the sin of the Edomites because of their arrogance. And their arrogant nature of the Edomites will be vanquished. They will be brought so low that they will be compared to the lowest country recorded in Tanakh. K'ma'apechat Sidon va'amorah v'shochnea, Amar Hashem. Their land will be overturned like Sidon and Amorah. And by the way, this isn't just metaphorical, but actually topographical, because the place of where Sodom and Amorah is the lowest place on earth by the Dead Sea. So the Edom will go from the highest mountains to the lowest place on earth, a symbol of hubris gone wrong. They were so sure of themselves, so arrogant that Yirmiyahu says in Pasuk 21, Mikol Neflam Ra'asha Ha'aretz, the voice of their fall, that sound is going to be so great that the land is going to shake. That's how long their fall will be, that when they hit the ground, everyone will know. Edom is also one of the countries who is interested in joining Zedekiah in his rebellion, and was also one of the countries to receive a yoke. There isn't a specific sin listed for Damascus or Kedar, only the description of their country's thinking that they are secure and above being captured. You can almost hear the voice of the people of Yehuda ringing in these other countries. Lo nir'eh et achritenu. We'll never see any calamity. Our lives will go on being just as secure as they always have been. Finally, we come to the country of Elam. Dr. Chagai Misgav notes that Elam does not fit the same picture as the other countries. All of the countries that we've listed so far have at least been in the vicinity of Malchut Yudah. They were countries that they encountered. Even Kedar, which was a little further, is the example of the country that Yirmiyahu brings when he wants the people of Yudah to go around the world and see if any other nation has ever given up their God. In Perek Bet, Yirmiyahu says to the people of Yudah, Ki ivru iye kitim uru'u Kedar, shalchu v'itbonenu ma'od uru'u hein haitakazo. Go and send to the farthest places of the world, the farthest in their world, and go to the islands of Kitim and to Kedar, and see and discover, has anyone done what you've done, which is give up their gods and replace them with another god? Yirmiyahu is saying to them there in Perek Bet, look at the people of Kedar, the nomadic people, even they who wander around from place to place, they don't give up their gods, but you, Bnei Israel, are so quick to exchange Hashem. The reason why Yirmiyahu uses Kedar as his analogy, first of all, because it works because they're nomadic, and even so, they don't give up their gods. But also because to Yehuda, Kedar was very far at the time. But it was in the realm of possibility that somebody could go to them. They knew about the people of Kedar. Elam was so removed from them. It was almost like this country from the storybooks. But nobody would ever go to Elam because it was just too far. Additionally, Elam is different in the way that it's presented. It has a title to its nevuah that no other country has. In verse 34, it says, "Asher hayad var Hashem el Yirmiyahu anavi el Elam, brishit mamlachut tzidkia melch Yehuda lemor." This is the word of Hashem to Yirmiyahu about Elam in the beginning of the kingship of Tzidkiyahu, and this is what he said, Ko amar Hashem tzvakot, so says Hashem, Hineni shover et keshet Elam reshik furatam. I'm going to break Elam. Now, this nevuah to Elam, it has a title, Asher hayad var Hashem el Yirmiyahu, Hashem's word to Yirmiyahu, plus it has a date and a stamp of the prophecy taking place. This was told to Tzidkiyahu. It was told in the beginning of his kingship. So why is Elam so different? Why is Elam a country that really is very far from where Yehuda is? Why is Yirmiyahu even bringing it up? And why is it presented differently? Because of these aspects to it that are different, Chagai Misgav suggests that perhaps it's the key not only for understanding Elam itself, but perhaps all of these prophecies to the nation. And whenever I speak about these prophecies to my husband, Donnie, he always points out that the most important thing to consider when learning these Nevuot Lagoyim is to consider who is the audience for these prophecies. So let's talk about that now. Who is the audience for the Nevuot Lagoyim? In this prophecy to Elam, and this only in this prophecy, Yirmiyahu tells us who the audience is by telling us the time frame. It's Tzidkiyahu, or the people of Yudah in the time of Tzidkiyahu. Elam is very far away, and it's also a very strong country with an organized army that in theory could take on the Babylonians and save the people of Yudah from their fate. And Tzidkiyahu, who's thinking about rebelling against the Babylonians, would be thinking about perhaps Elam will come in, sweep up and save us from the Babylonians. And we know Tzidkiyahu that this type of magical thinking was not foreign to him. This is how he lived his life. By talking to Tzidkiyahu about the fall of Elam, Yirmiyahu is telling them, don't think that Elam is any stronger than any other country. The wars of this time are not won by might. It doesn't even matter if powerful and distant Elam would suddenly decide to come save you. Wars are won and lost by your actions, not by the strength of countries. And powerful Elam will fall as well, as will the nomads of Kedar, the distant and still mentioned people of Damascus, and then even your neighbors, Edom, Amoz, Moab, the Philistines, and Egypt. And notice how Yirmiyahu starts from the closest, Egypt, and the Plishtim, and then goes farther and farther in his prophecies, echoing how the people are thinking of these countries, thinking about which countries might come and save them. Their first thought is of Egypt. And then they go, and finally they end up thinking even of Elam, even of Damascus, that isn't really even a country and is also pretty far away. Yirmiyahu is saying to the people, according to Chagai Misgav, don't wait for these countries. Don't wait for Elam, just like you shouldn't wait for any country to save you. They received yokes just like you did. They aren't your friends, and they also will fall to Babylon. Let's consider now who are all the possible audiences for these nevuot. One possibility, as we've just discussed, is Tzidkiyahu, convincing him not to rely on these countries. They will all fall to Babylonia. You need to submit. It's the only way forward. Another possible audience is Bnei Israel, telling them, look how all of your enemies will fall eventually. They will be defeated, but you will one day rise. And this is a type of comfort. It's a consolation for Bnei Israel, the defeat of the countries that they feared so much. Another way to look at it is similar to the way we looked at it as a message to Tzidkiyahu, asking Bnei Israel, are these really the countries that you want to save you, that you would want to align yourself with? These are countries with centuries of sins against you, with Jewish blood on their hands. How can you look to them instead of Hashem? Why do you always think that they are more trustworthy than Hashem, who has stood by you and protected you? And this is the same message that Yirmiyahu gave them in Perek Bet. Why would you go drink the waters of the Nile? Why would you go drink the waters of Shihor? You have beautiful fresh water in your own country. Why are you going and leaning on countries that one day will stab you in the back and their water isn't any better? Lastly, perhaps the audience is the countries themselves. They too need to change their ways. They also need to accept Hashem as their king and renounce their arrogant ways. They each act as if nothing can touch them, as if the position they have will never falter. The sin that we see over and over in these countries is the sin of arrogance, that we are better than other countries. We're stronger. We will never fall. Yirmiyahu is telling the countries that they too must realize their own frailty. They too need to submit to Hashem's plan, not just because Nebuchadnezzar is coming for the Jews and they are collateral damage, but because Nebuchadnezzar, Hashem's servant, is coming for them too, to shatter their hubris and to break their illusions and to punish them for all their sins. Thank you for studying together. L'ilo Nishmat Malka Esther, Bat Tzvi Yosef.